more gold being produced, and we'll have, I think the batch will go probably into early, end of February, early March. What are we, the 24th today? So yeah, it's probably got another couple of weeks going on the batch. And then, it always takes a while to sell the gold, and then for it to go to the joint venture, and for the joint venture then to pay us a dividend. So, but we'll be reporting on that once we have all those results, later in March.
Rick Van Nieuwenhuyse, Contango Ore, how are you, my friend? Good to see you.
Andy, nice to see you again.
It's always my pleasure. So last time I had you on was late January. You were going to have a talk with the banks just to redo some terms, if you would, or renegotiate some terms. But actually, let's take a step back. Tell me what happened before, about a month before, and then tell me about the meeting with the banks.
Yeah, so if you've been following Contango, we late November, right around Thanksgiving, had the updated mine plan from we received the updated mine plan from Kinross, which reduced the amount of gold being projected to be produced on a quarterly basis or on an annual basis in 2025. So this was an updated mine plan from Kinross that showed reduced amount of gold production and unfortunately increasing costs. And it was driven by a number of factors, one of which was a recently imposed reduction in the amount of weight bridge at the Cheetah Floodplain Bridge, what's known as the Cheetah Floodplain Bridge, just not too far outside of Fairbanks. It had a restriction on it already in terms of weight, but then they put a further restriction on it. And this all relates back to the State Department of Transportation not getting alignment with the Federal Department of Transportation on their STIP plan. The STIP plan is the State Transportation Plan. And it mostly was administrative thing. So bottom line is they didn't have an approved plan. And so they had to go and reevaluate a bunch of the bridges in Alaska, not just the Cheetah Floodplain, but a number of them. And that led them to put the further weight restriction on the bridge. Mainly because if you don't have a plan to repair a bridge when it's sort of planned to be repaired, you have to redo the calculus and say, okay, well, what does that mean in terms of bridge weight restrictions? So anyways, that was part of it. Another part was that the ore had more moisture in it than would have been in the feasibility study. Meaning you're carrying water rather than you're still transporting, but you're carrying more water in the ore rather than just ore. And then there also was further reduction as a result of ice and snow buildup in the wintertime and muds build up on the trailers in the summertime. And most of that was being picked up on the trip from the mine site down to the highway. The highway's relatively clear, but obviously a gravel road, an unimproved road, you pick up more mud in the summertime and more ice and snow in the wintertime. So those three main factors reduced the effective amount of ore that was being transported to the mill at Fort Knox in comparison to the feasibility study, which was the base plan or the original plan, if you will. So long story short, that resulted in an adjustment down in the number of ounces we expected to produce in 2025, and at higher cost. Life of mine costs went from basically 1200 to 1400, and higher that this year, specifically up to around little over 1600. And that's a plan. So we're obviously trying to, improve on the plan, and Kinross is working hard to reduce the amount of moisture content in the rocks and gain a few tons there, reduce the ice and snow buildup in the wintertime by just basically physically knocking it off the trucks when they get down to the bottom of the hill before they get on the highway, and then putting in a wash plant to wash off the mud in the summertime. Again, most of that mud and ice and snow is built up on the truck ride between the top of the hill and before they get to the highway. So, but that is the plans, and those are the the plans that are set in motion. And that resulted in, I think, the market being concerned about whether we're not going to, we'll be able to meet our head requirements and delivery of the head schedule. So that prompted us to renegotiate things with the banks. And obviously with the holidays in the middle of all that, it took longer than we would have liked. I think we had alignment on what the adjusted plan would be, which is basically just rolling the hedges out a couple more quarters. And in the end, that's exactly what we did. Unfortunately, it took a month, almost 2 months to do that. Obviously when the market doesn't like it when you don't have news and when you're expecting to get something resolved that takes longer, it's obviously disappointing. But we did release that last week. And it was pretty much as expected. We were just rolled the hedges out a couple of quarters into 2027, reduced the hedge book delivery dates for 25 and 26, and then extended it a little bit into 27. So we're about 70% hedged for 25 and 26, and then very little hedging going on in 27. But it's kind of a, you call sort of a makeup of just the reductions that we've seen in 25 and 26. So I think that's the, and obviously the debt repayment schedule is sort of, you know, tied to that.
So tell me about that, the debt repayment schedule, and then I'll tell you about some comments we have actually on your videos or past videos and really on the site asking. So, but go ahead.
Sure. Well, I mean, it's not, there's not a lot to say there. It's just making the debt repayments schedule reflect what we expect to then deliver in terms of how much to the hedges. And then the sale of gold, obviously we get a dividend from the operations, and then that dividend is used in part to pay back the hedges. So I think that's outlined in the press release, in pretty good detail. And if there are specific questions in there, I'd probably want to get my CFO, Mike Clark, to answer those.
Got it. Well, actually, the question was just an update really on what you just said, and you gave that update. We just had a few comments. One's an update coming. So to all who have been following the story, here you go. Here is your update, and it's dropping today on February 25th, 2025. If I can just say this as an investor, and to all of my listeners and viewers, I am an investor, an active investor. And also, I was very happy with the price that I got Contango Ore at. And also, just for full disclosure, Contango Ore is the sponsor of naturalresourcestocks.net. I am more than likely, and this is not by any ways a promise or a recommendation, but we're more than going to be averaging in even more, just a little bit lower, just because I feel and don't see a whole lot of downside from here. And I see a tremendous amount of upside. And that's basically speculating in the stock market, buy low, sell high. But that is not a recommendation. Really, from me to you, Rick, it almost seems silly. Meaning
bet.
You guys got, and it's good for me because I want to buy more. I mean, but you guys got dumped on as you did because of ice, mud, and moisture in the soil. I mean, and again, there's a lot, I'm sure it's a lot more complicated than that, but it just seems like a logistical issue, just getting the gold to the mills. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean that's part of it in terms of the cost and the reduction in the bridge weight and the moisture and the ice and snow and mud buildup. Those are physical things that just, you know, when you're hauling ice and snow and water or mud, that's not hauling ore, so that displaces ore. So that's part of the equation. The other part is that costs are going up. Yeah. And of course, this really, I mean, it's not just affecting us, it's affecting the whole industry. When you look at the major companies, all of their own sustaining costs have all increased significantly. So obviously the government tells us we only have, what is it now, 3% inflation or whatever. We all know that's BS. If you want to build something, you're still looking at sort of 15, 20% inflationary in terms of getting something significant done. And that's the reason the gold price is going up. I mean, it's right. It's in tandem here. It's not like everything happens in a vacuum. It's all related, clearly. You know, why is the gold price $2,900? So, because it's gone up because of inflationary pressures, at least in part. I'm sure there's other factors as well, but that's certainly, you know, historically has always been the relationship. Gold goes up because we devalue our currencies or we inflate our currencies. So, the margin is what's important. And that's what, you know, I think we're maintaining a roughly $1,000 margin. If we have $1,600 cash costs, all in sustaining cash costs, and a $2,900 gold price, even on a blended basis, I think we're around 2,400, something like that. So, you know, we're maintaining a decent margin, and over the life of the mine, the guidance is $1,400 for our all in sustaining costs. We're still making money. We're still making pretty good money. First order of business is to deliver into the hedges and pay the debt off. We can look at, if the gold price continues to go up, we'll continue to make more money, and we'll be able to do more things. So, do I wish we didn't have hedges in place?
Yeah.
Hell yeah. But, when we put the hedges in place, the gold price was $1,800. And so we've seen a huge, $1,000 increase in the gold price. And that, again, is because of inflation, continued inflation. Obviously it's a startup year too. I should probably just point that out. Last year we had planned to produce between 30 and 35,000 ounces of gold. We ended up producing 42. So from that side, it was a very successful year, producing more gold and at our guidance, around $1,200 is what we guided to. The feasibility study had it at, little over 1,100. I can't remember. There's like 1,116 or something like that, I think was in the feasibility study, which of course was done 3 years prior. That's how these things work. But we'd always kind of guided towards that 1200 number. So, where does the gold price go from here? Or where does our margin go from here? I think, the bridge weight restrictions, they're in place. Cat insult or injury, I think I mentioned this to you before, right around the end of the year, I think it was just at the end of the year, the State Department of Transportation and the Federal Department of Transportation did align on the STIP plan, the State Transportation Plan. And so now the dollars to fix the bridges are in place. And so now that was just, it was just, like I said, it was part of the equation in terms of the fewer tons being delivered to the mill. But, we still have the weight of the ice and snow and the mud, and we still have the, it's one of those things that, it would have been nice to have another couple of tons of ore going through the mill, but, and it is what it is. So those things we can't sort of, fix or adjust.
Yeah. Well, tell me about this then. When I first met you, it's been about 9 months ago. I was astounded by how quickly you, got the mine into operation from permitting to infrastructure to pouring. You did it so quick and so fast. And it seemed like a model that I'd never seen before, really, to be candid with you. And so it was very impressive. Are there plans to take the model that you have and acquire other assets, put on the same model, if you would, in the near future?
Yeah, certainly. We refer to it, the direct shipping ore. I think we like the term hybrid royalty model in the sense of what it means for us from a cash flow basis, because we're not building a mill and a tailings facility, because we're taking advantage of existing infrastructure in the case of Manh Choh at the Fort Knox mill. That's capital we don't have to spend. That's a reduced environmental footprint by a significant amount, which means permitting is easier. It's not easy. Permitting is never easy. But all we have to do is permit a mine site, an open pit mine on private land owned by the Tetlin tribe. If anybody's who's familiar with permitting knows that if you're permitting something on private land, it's always easier than permitting something on public land. And short answer is because on public land, the public gets a say in what happens to public land. On private land, the public doesn't get a say. So you literally just have to meet the regulations, not the endorsement of the community, if you will, for the permit that you're seeking. In the case of developing Manh Choh, there are a number of permits, but from the federal government, it's the wetlands dredge and fill permit, and that's a permit that's issued by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. We had a very minimal amount of impact to wetlands. It's essentially the road that connects the mine site to the highway. It was, I think, 5.7 acres of wetlands disturbance, which barely triggers NEPA, National Environmental Policy Act. If you're over 5 acres of wetlands disturbance, you trigger NEPA, which requires an environmental assessment or an EIS. And that's at the purview of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. So we did that, and we got that done in a year. In addition, and you run these in parallel, you require mine operating permits from the state of Alaska, standard operating procedure. But again, you're working on private land. So their main issues are related to water quality. We don't have a lot of air quality issues because, again, we don't have a big power plant. You have about a megawatt of power on site to run the mine. It just doesn't take a lot of power. It's basically pumps that are moving water around and things like that. So the permitting that results from not building a mill and a tailings facility is huge. It's a huge difference. If you're building a mill and a tailings facility, you need a lot of power. You're displacing, you know, probably a lot of wetlands for your tailings facility, water quality, things that you have to meet. So, you know, a lot more concerns, if you will, from an environmental standpoint, that we just avoid by not building a mill and a tailings facility. And to answer your question, yeah, we like this model. We think for a junior company, it's difficult to get into production. And even when you're in production, it's hard to, you know, to maintain that quality and level of production, as we saw last November when we had an adjusted mine plan that, because of ice and snow and mud and bridge weight restrictions, we reduced the amount of gold we were going to produce. So it's a tough market. But we like this plan because it does reduce the amount of permitting effort that we have to do, because we have a vastly reduced environmental footprint. So that's the plan that we have in place at Lucky Shot, which is already a fully permitted mining operation. Again, we've been underground, we've been drilling underground, we've developed underground, so we know all the things we have to do to meet our permit standards. But we are fully permitted at Lucky Shot. So our objective is to get back underground and drilling, and develop a mine plan that we think can produce 30 to 50,000 ounces of gold a year at Lucky Shot. We're next to the highway. We're next to the railroad at Lucky Shot. So, we're not talking about a huge mine. It's relatively small, but it's very high grade. We're looking at something that's in the neighborhood of, 10 to 15 grams per ton is probably the range of grades that we're looking at. It's a narrow high grade mesothermal vein. Very, very consistent in terms of the drilling that we've done. Like any high grade vein, you got to find the ore shoots, and that requires a lot of drilling. So the plan is to do about 15,000 meters of underground and some surface drilling to delineate an ore body that can generate a mine plan to produce, like I said, 30 to 50,000 ounces of gold a year. Probably start, at the 30, and then as you get more working faces, you can build that up to 40 or 50. And then similarly at Johnson Tract, it's a beautiful ore body, very thick. It averages over 40 meters wide. By comparison, Lucky Shot averages, we've blocked it out at 3 meter minimum mining width. So when you have 40 meters to mine in the single cut, that's on average, that's a relatively easy and large, good scale underground mine in terms of production. Now, Johnson Tract is multi-metal. It's copper, lead, zinc, gold, silver, very high gold, averages between 5 and 6 grams of gold. And then the balance of the metals, it's a 9.6 gram equivalent, but made up principally of copper, zinc, and silver. And then of course, in addition to the gold. But very similar there. It's a very similar development plan as Lucky Shot, except we need to permit the underground at Johnson Tract. We don't have an underground tunnel at Johnson Tract, and so that's not permitted. That's what we're doing right now. That's a state permit that's issued. What's that?
Do you have an ETA on that permit?
Yeah, I think we think it's going to take about a year from plus minus a year from now.
That's pretty quick.
Again, that we've approached this in a way that we put the development rock in a post mineral intrusive. It's referred to as a day site, a post mineral day site. There's a big structural zone that separates the ore body from this post mineral day site. Keep the workings, all development workings in the day site, and you don't have any water quality issues. And again, that's what the permitting agencies are mainly concerned with. You see a lot of mines in the, back in the day, they just went right into the ore body and then the ore body oxidizes and you got a bunch of crappy water coming out of the tunnel. Well, that's not smart. And so we don't do that in today's world. We look for places to put the underground workings where they're not going to create a water quality issue for it from an environmental standpoint. We are working on land that's owned by an Alaska Native Corporation. So again, private land, that helps a lot in the permitting process. We completed permitting a road construction between the campsite and the portal site, future portal site. It's about a 3-mile road, 5-kilometer road. We got that permitted in about a year. Might have been a little longer, but in plus or minus. We are now permitting, getting lined up to start permitting the road down to the port site and the kind of barge landing site. Our Native Corporation partner, Siri, Cook Inlet Regional Inc., we call it Siri, received the federal right-of-way easements from the federal government, as per their agreement with the federal government. So, things are moving along. All these steps take time. They don't happen overnight. But we have a good solid 5-year plan to develop the Johnson Tract project, and a 2-3 year plan for Lucky Shot. Those plans are still in place. I think the other thing that I think shareholders and investors need to understand is that using our direct shipping ore model. So again, for both Lucky Shot and Johnson Tract, we're planning on mining at the site and transporting the ore to an existing mill facility. And so what we're doing right now is finding that mill facility to process these two types of ore. They may end up being the same facility. We're talking to a number of groups right now. We're under confidentiality, so we obviously can't say too much, but that's the other part of making the DSO model work is like we've done at Manchu, finding a partner like a Kinross to use their mill. And grade helps. I mean, you can't do this if you don't have grade. I mean, if you have a 1 gram deposit, you can barely get it to the mill.
Right.
From the edge of the pit, right? So that's just the reality. But as they say in our business, grade is king. So that's why we've focused on looking at high quality deposits. Manchu is I think one of the highest grade open pit gold mines in the world at between 7 and 8 grams. Our Lucky Shot project is the current resource grade is small. It's only a little over 100,000 ounces, but it's 14 grams per ton, which is close to 0.5 ounce. So, and then Johnson Tract, as I said, is 9.5 grams, but it's a nice thick ore body, good metallurgy. So, in fact, we're coming out with a PEA on Johnson Tract in March. It'll be by the end of March, but I'm hoping it's more towards the middle. But these things always take longer than you'd like them to get all the QPs to sign off and everything. But that's a work in progress. And I think it'll be impressive, when we release it, that it's, what a good quality ore body this is. And it's really well fit to this DSO model.
Got it. So really investors or potential investors just need to keep a lookout for that. That will be hitting in March, middle to end of March, hopefully middle. And then anything else that you can tell me about that will be hitting in the next few, and you've just said a lot, so by all means. but that investors and potential investors need to be aware of in the next 60 to 90 days.
I should say, actually, we're in the middle of our first campaign for 2025, batch campaign for processing Montreux ore at the Fort Knox Mill. So that's in process. We'll start selling gold here. And as I said, that gold is being sold at spot. So we're, we're looking forward to getting that out. So by...
Nah.
Yeah, I mean, we'll...
Congratulations.
More gold being produced, and we'll have, I think the batch will go probably into early, end of February, early March. What are we, the 24th today? So yeah, it's probably got another couple of weeks going on the batch. And then it always takes a while to sell the gold and then for it to go to the joint venture and for the joint venture then to pay us a dividend. So, but we'll be reporting on that once we have all those results, later in March.
Well, that made me happy as an investor. So congratulations to all of us. So, all right.
It's Rick. A tough business. I mean, who'd expect at $2,900 gold, you still have a very tepid market, but that is in fact what we have.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hang in there. I certainly believe in the project to all my listeners and viewers, and this is going to do really well because this is some really good news that you mentioned. But it is a tough business and takes some tough people, good people to get through it. But I do see some rainbow, I guess a pot of gold, pun intended, at the end of the rainbow here. So thank you, Rick, for your time. I'll see you at PDAC.
Sounds good. If you have questions, if investors have questions, they can just send a note into info@contangoore.com on our website.
Excellent. I'm going to put that in the show notes on both YouTube as well as the Spotify and Apple Podcasts. I'll put the website in there, the email there, as well as your ticker symbols on the exchange that you're traded on.
Thank you, Andy, and we'll see you at PDAC. Take care.
Take care.